Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Broadcasting from the Ante Up Studio, it's the longest-running poker podcast for the everyday poker player with your host, Joe Scales.
Hello, A-Team, and welcome to the Ante Up Poker Podcast, where every hand is an opportunity, every player is a friend, and every episode is a winning experience. I'm your host, Joe Scales, and March has flown past. Last night was the March Patreon game. Congrats to Brian Bly and Bob Popper on chopping that. Notice I didn't say win, because a chop is not a win, it's a chop. But they did take down the prize, and Brian also knocked me out to get the $25 bounty, so congrats on that. We also had some new faces in the game, which is always good to see. T-Titan and Rob were our newest members of Patreon. Welcome to you guys. Make sure, you know, if you want to join Patreon, make sure to join soon, because whenever we do an interview with someone like we did with Trooper or Matt Savage, we always open up some questions from our Patreon members. And we have a new one of those coming up soon. So join us and I'll let you know when we get a little closer and who we're going to be talking to before we open it up to questions. Lastly, I know I've said this before, and I'm not going to keep coming back to this over and over, but thank you again to everyone that has written into the show and given some words of encouragement during a tough time. It feels good to know that there's a community behind us. And actually, that's another word that I keep coming back to. This community is strong. And I love to see the growth that we've had over this past year and in a little bit. That's all I have, so let's get on with the show.
Find out what conversations are happening around the poker table with Table Talk.
We are back around the poker table with Elle. How's it going?
I am slowly but surely returning from zombie land.
Yeah, we are reacclimating, so to speak, to our
own home,
yeah, to our familiar surroundings.
Yeah, we were in Kansas for close to almost 3 weeks, and so returning home and getting back in a routine and 2 full days on the road and going from spring forward one Sunday and the following week leaving Central Time and coming back to Eastern Time and just... all the things. We're making adjustments and slowly returning to ourselves.
Yeah. And I just want to give a big shout out to the listeners/viewers. Thank you all for being patient with us. The magazine is coming, I promise, but it's been way behind. Matt Savage is our feature. He talked about the Savage Average, which actually just happened on the 17th.
Oh, can't wait to hear more about that.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool concept. And Matt also presented a situation for Elliot for the Call the Floor, which, you know, will be later on in the show. But keep an eye out for that.
And we did manage to get the cruise website live. So check it out, guys. AnteUpCruises.com. We are cruising in October. We've been talking about this for a couple of months, just giving you sneak peeks into things. And now it's live. So go sign up. Join us. Mid-October, lots and lots of different packages. You can bring your spouse, friend, anyone that you would like. And we can't wait to sail away with you.
Right. And you know, you can, like you said, you can come and just hang out. We do have the private poker room where there's going to be different tournaments and cash games throughout the cruise. And so,
spoiler alert, we're bringing family. So not only will you get to hang with Joe and I, but also my mom is coming.
Yeah.
And a few other folks, friends and family members as well. So we're really excited about it.
Yeah. So Anti-Up Cruises, and that's with an S at the end, .com. Or you can go to the main page, our antiupmagazine.com, and you can scroll down. There's a banner there that'll take you there as well. So, I mean, we did hate to leave Kansas, but it is good to be back in our familiar surroundings.
Yes, but there's been a common theme with me.
Yeah.
Which you can laugh all you want, but flopping quads has been against me for the last 10 days, not only with my father-in-law, who I got my rear end handed to me at the family table, and then last night in the Patreon game.
Yeah.
I had great hands both times, and then they flapped quads. Really? Really, guys? Now I'm on that downward spiral of, like, I get it. I'm riding the wave. I'm riding the wave.
Yep. Yeah. But I will say, I've never seen anyone laugh as hard as my father when he would beat you in a hand.
Yeah, he thoroughly enjoyed it.
He did?
You just wait, Gary. You just wait.
But speaking of that Patreon game, it was last night, and congratulations to Brian Bly.
He's always a great competitor. He took the bounty on Joe and then chopped with Bob Popper.
Yep. That's the second time Bob and Brian have chopped that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, Brian walked away with $50. Bob walked away with $25. It's fun to put bounty on Joe occasionally, and maybe we should put a bounty on Brian. Who knows? We'll have to see if he's agreeable to that.
I will say, I mean, we're not talking about life-changing money when we play this thing, but
it's fun.
We have so much fun.
Yeah, and we're getting people from all over.
Yeah.
Jay from Michigan joined us last night. That was fun to see him again.
We have Texas represented in there, Chicago represented in
Florida.
There. Tennessee was represented last night. That was one of our new
Ohio
Patreon members. Yeah, Ohio. So, yeah.
Get your state in. Jump in. Come on and join us. It's fun. It's very minimal investment into being able to play with us every month. And then also you get behind the scenes stuff.
Yeah. And we always, I mentioned this in the intro, but we always also offer the Patreon members a chance to ask questions of our feature in the magazine or different interviews that we do. So just fun stuff. I wanted to circle back, though. We mentioned a couple of stories that have evolved, I guess, for lack of a better word. But that charity tournament with the Warriors.
Oh, yeah.
That Phil Hellmuth was the MC.
Yeah.
Yeah. They raised over $3.5 million.
Which is insane. Amazing. That's how you bet on better. And all of that money is going to be awarded to Bay Area nonprofits. So way to go, Phil Hellmuth, and all of those who participated. And also massive shout out to Clay Thompson. He was the last Warrior player standing.
Yeah. So a new name this year. It had been the same names for the past few years. So it was good to see.
Did they also get training and tips and tricks from Phil?
I'm going to say no, because if they would have, Phil would have sure to let us know.
That is true. That is true. And also another story that we've been following is Kevin Martin.
Yeah.
We didn't realize he was either going to go to $5,000 or 500 hours, right?
Yeah, I didn't realize he had put an end time on it for 500 hours.
But it came around this week and he made $500 in 500 hours.
Yeah. So basically a dollar an hour. If you, I mean, he was saying it was $3 an hour for the time that he was playing poker. But if you think about the whole stream, it was basically $1 an hour.
Wow.
But I'm sure he made some, I'm sure there was plenty of people that joined him on the stream that he probably made money through and whatnot too. But
I would just think that's a difficult thing.
Yeah. I think people think live streaming is easy, but it's really not. Jason, I remember back in the day, Jason Somerville used to stream just every day. He was playing poker on live stream, and he made it look so easy that I think everybody just is like, oh, I can just jump on there and do this. And it's hard. You got to make decisions, and you've got chats coming up over here and trying to communicate with the people and make it entertaining, because some, you know, if you're playing poker and you're concentrating, you're not wanting to speak, but right. That's pretty boring for the people watching. So
right.
It's not easy.
Well, thanks for letting us follow along with you though, in that journey, Kevin, because it was interesting to see how it would turn out.
Yeah. And one last thing I wanted to make sure to mention was the win and Encore in Las Vegas they earned the number one and number two spots as the best Las Vegas casinos by Travel and Leisure magazine.
So way to go, guys.
I think that is a testament. That's a testament to that organization. Steve Whiteman and that whole group puts together a great staff. I know when I was out there.
Yeah, in December, wasn't able to join you, but yeah. You just had nothing but wonderful things to say about the accommodations and the staff and the facility itself.
Yeah. So congrats to you guys. It's really a culmination of all your hard work. So that's all I have. Did you have anything you wanted to add in there?
Go spring. Man, are my allergies going bananas right now.
Yeah?
Yeah. It's 3 weeks ahead on the East Coast. That's another thing we came back to.
Oh, yeah. That's true.
Everything is flowering and exploding.
I gotta mow the lawn.
Oh, yeah. We do. Other than that, just always a pleasure to be around the table with you, Joe.
Likewise.
Now it's time for Call the Floor with Elliot Schechter.
Elliot Schechter is the poker room manager for Rivers Casino in Schenectady, New York. He joins us each week to say how he would rule on situations that come up in your games, and he's with us again this week. Elliot, how's it going, man?
Things are going great. Hi there, Joe. How you doing today?
I'm doing all right. Like I said earlier, I'm back in some familiar surroundings, so got a good night's sleep in my own bed, so that's always a good thing.
Oh, very nice.
And we have kind of a fun Call the Floor this week. We have Matt Savage is our feature story in the magazine this month, and he threw out a situation that he wanted to see how you would rule on this as well. It's a situation that's going to be discussed at the TDA Summit this year. And so we have the video. So let's go to the video, and then we'll get your thoughts on it. How's that?
That'll work. That sounds good.
Basically, it's, if you have two chips in your hand, you can ask Elliot about this, and you have one in the pot that's oversized. So the blinds are 1,500, 3,000. You have a 5K chip in the big blind position, okay? And now it comes back to you, and it's been raised to 6,000. So you have the 5K chip in there and one 5K chip behind for a total of 10,000. You pick up both of those 5K chips and throw them into the pot at the same time. Many, many people think it's a call, including prominent tournament directors. I'm saying because you manipulated those chips, it is now a raise and you're all in for 10,000. But many, many people disagree. And, you know, we're going to talk about this at the summit coming up. So I'd like to hear Elliot's opinion on that as well.
So basically, you've got two oversized chips. You have one of your 5,000 chips out there already because you're in the big blind. Somebody raises to 6,000. You pick up your 5K chip that's already out there, and then you put both of your chips together and throw it in. Is it a call or an all-in?
There are a lot of rules in the TDA book of rules. Some say one thing and some might describe a similar but not identical situation and recommend a different outcome. This certainly falls into that conversation. The TDA rules are clear. Rule 45 is multiple chip betting. So if somebody other than the blinds had been facing that bet and threw in 10K, that's a call. That much we know. Simply because they didn't say anything. And if you remove one of the two 5K chips, the remaining 5K chip is not enough to make the 6K call. Therefore, putting in the two chips silently when having no chips in the pot already is only a call. If that player had wanted to raise, they should have spoken up and made their intentions clear. And that is pretty much the gist of Rule 45. Rule 46 goes on to further explain about having chips already in the pot and then facing a bet and putting in chips silently. So Rule 46, Part C, is pretty simple. If new chips are added silently and the bet is unclear to the house, call and raise rules 41 through 45 apply as follows. Part 2, if prior chips are partly pulled back or if prior chips cover the call, the combined final chip is a raise. So that's the gray area. But part 1 is much more explicit and much more important. So if prior chips don't cover the call and are either left alone or fully pulled back, so this bet was fully pulled back, an overchip is a call, and multiple new chips are subject to the 50% raise standard. So the bet was a 3 blind plus a min raise of 3, so we got 6K total. 10K were entered silently after the player had removed 5K and then placed 10K in the pot. Well, 4,000 is the obviously overage above the 6. 4 is more than 50% of 3K. It's actually 133% of 3K. And by this rule, it qualifies as a raise. In the few times I've seen it here in New York, and the many times I've seen it out in Nevada, that's pretty much the way it's been ruled. Some people have decided to rule that Rule 45 trumps Rule 46. That is not the case. If Rule 45 trumped Rule 46, Rule 46 would never have been written, added, and voted upon. Yes, we know that if the player had no chips in the pot and they were merely acting in turn and throwing in the two 5Ks, they would be subject to a call only. That is not this case. This is a much different case. The player had chips in the pot and removed those chips and then placed the chips back into the pot. Well, when you manipulate your chips, the outcome is different. And it's specifically written here. Why my fellow TDA members are not enforcing it like this, I don't know. We did agree to this. And it is logical. If you've got chips in the pot and you take them back out and then put them back in, you're subject to something. You're going to be making a bet of some kind. And in this case, you left it unclear. And as we state many times throughout the TDA rules, and certainly in the opening passages, unclear actions on the part of a player, not making intentions clear, will lead to judgment calls that will generally default to the most logical application of the rules and the context of the betting combined. So if that player's intention was to merely call, they had no business touching their chips to begin with. All they had to do was throw in the other 5K and by the oversized chip calling rule, it would have been merely a call of the extra 1K. By taking the chips back and then throwing them both back in most cases, that's a bet of whatever the chips are.
Right.
And the 50% rule applies. Therefore, it is a raise to whatever the bet is, whatever bet applies. So 10K is a legal and applicable wager in that spot, and it should have been that way. Apparently, more and more, obviously, our fellow TDs, floors, managers, directors are defaulting to Rule 45 above Rule 46. And I can see the logic. I mean, yeah, if you didn't have any chips in the pot and you were supposed to call 10K and you were supposed to call 6K and you threw 10K in, yeah, it's a call. But these are not identical situations.
Right. And as we have said numerous times in this segment, the easiest way to avoid confusion is to make your intentions clear. Saying call or all in or whatever, it takes 2 seconds. It's really not hard.
That's part A, and that's in the rules too. Paying attention, knowing how to act when it's your turn, those are all in the rules. Making your intentions clear is one of the one of the primary responsibilities of every player in a tournament. This also goes back to the dealers. And when I was a dealer, I was inherently lazy. I used what is called an economy of motion. I tried to do the most with the least amount of movement and activity for a whole lot of reasons. Mostly that if you're not doing too many unnecessary things, you can pay attention to everything that's happening.
Right.
I certainly don't want to be distracted, and certainly not distracted by my own actions that are taking my attention from important things to rather unimportant things. And making change for a blind may be deemed unimportant. Well, those days are done. We don't have many, many chips in play. And even when we do, it doesn't matter simply because players will, for some reason, hold on to their larger denominated chips as if they were gold or platinum, as opposed to making change to, you know, play the game correctly. The dealers are just moving on and assuming that everybody else is paying attention, which is a bad assumption. Not everybody's paying attention. And they're not making change for the blinds. I mean, let's face it. This is a chicken and egg situation. And had the dealer changed up that blind before the action got back to that player, this situation doesn't exist.
That's a fair point.
It doesn't exist. They got the correct change with which to bet. It's impossible to make your intentions unclear if you have the correct change.
Yeah.
And even if the dealer didn't make change, because obviously they don't carry a bank full of chips for tournaments, they should have been asking the player to get that change by another player before the action started, before the cards were out even. There are simple solutions to complex situations as long as people are paying attention and using a little forethought.
Right. And the dealer could also verify what their intention is, right? Are you calling or are you raising?
Yes, they can absolutely speak up. But then we get into very, very specific and technical questions that when did their intentions go? Why can you declare a bet after you've already placed the chips in the pot? The bet speaks for itself. You can declare a bet or you can place a bet. Whichever one happens first is generally the accepted wager. Well, and now we default back to this is unclear. The chips were placed in the pot, and now we're asking. And granted, hopefully in this spot, the dealer is stopping the action. Okay, what is going on here? What are you trying to do? You absolutely suggested that correctly. And in most cases, we'd accept that and move on. On the other hand, I mean, let's face it, people are certainly driven by their own self-interest. The person in the big blind is probably going to not want that to be a raise so they can get in for the absolute minimum. The player who initially raised will generally want that to be a raise, especially because it keeps the action open and now he can whipsaw the big blind and come back over the top for yet another bet. So there are competing interests. Which is why we have rules, and which is why they have virtually predetermined outcomes. If we apply rule 46, it has outcome B. If we were applying rule 45, it has outcome A. Well, and we try to keep it simple. We try to default to a predetermined outcome as opposed to a judgment call as often as we can. I mean, when we're coming to the table and we're getting filled in by the dealer to potentially make a decision and apply a rule, we're quickly going through the old flow chart in our heads. Whereas most flow charts, generally, if you can answer yes, you continue. If you answer no, you default out. And this is the opposite. Right. Here, if you answer yes, you've already made your decision, you're good. If you default no, you keep going to ask another question, in which case, okay, is it yes or no here? You move on to the next step. Is it yes or no? Was it clear? Was it unclear? Were the chips in hand? Were the chips not in hand? Were the chips in the pot array? Did they declare before? Did they declare after? Once again, you're asking a lot of questions in rapid succession, trying to get to the right outcome. And we're trying to get to the fairest outcome and the clearest outcome. And that's why this is obviously a controversial topic. Is enforcing the 10K as a raise fair? Is making it only a 6K call fair? Is that the desired outcome, regardless of what is actually printed on our paper? And those are fair questions. But again, they were fair before, too, when we discussed them. And if you're gonna pull your chips out of the pot and then put chips back in the pot, it is logical and fair to assume that the chips you're moving forward are your bet.
Right.
And in no limit and pot limit games, you pretty much can bet whatever you want. It's not unfair and unreasonable to assume that the chips you move forward are the bet you're intending to make. And again, it goes back to context, which we're allowed to count. This is not a court of law. We don't have to get stuck on technicalities. We get to take all the information and then make a decision, and fairly as possible, which is written into our rules and is a very fair standard. And the context was simple. They removed the chips from the pot in order to make a bet. They then placed all their chips in the pot. It is not unreasonable for all those chips to become a full bet. It's just not. And once again, as you stated before, the player had the opportunity to not do that. They had the opportunity to just leave it alone. All they had to do was throw the other chip in the pot, and it's a call. Very simply, by well-established, well-understood, and well-regarded rules. They then made things more complex and less clear. Well, we have rules for that too. And again, the rule was applied as written. It's supposed to be a raise.
Right.
When I work with my leadership teams, regardless of where I am along my career, I have let them know that there is one standard that can take care of a lot of things. If somebody puts you in a spot where you have to read their mind, then they're in trouble and they're probably not going to win. We're not hired for our psychic ability. And that's not what we built our careers on. And that's not what we get involved in this great game for, is to read people's minds and understand what they're thinking. And we try to avoid that like the plague. It's just not fair to anybody. It's not fair to us. It's not fair to the rest of the players in the tournament or the table. And again, it allows for manipulation of situations and ankle shots. If you throw chips in the pot, you've made a bet of some kind. And in this case, you had chips in the pot already. Why did you remove them? Well, the rules are in place, so we don't have to actually ask these questions and get them answered. We just apply a rule that's fair. It's not unfair for this to be a bet. I don't see the case. And I'd like to hear from other tournament directors who feel that this needs to be merely a call, because that doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. I mean, if that's the way everybody's going to vote in June, I mean, shoot, if I'm part of 5% or less, or even 20% or less, I think the standard's 80% or more, then I'll live with it. I might not like it. There are plenty of rules in the rule book that I live with and don't like. And there are plenty of things we do here that I merely live with. And again, if all my team's on board and the players are on board and it's fair and I can understand it's fair, even though I don't like it, well, then that's the way it is. I don't need to have everything my way all the time.
Right. Well, and that's kind of the point of the TDA, right? Is to just find a solution, whether you all would handle it the same way or not. Now it's a rule, so it's at least standard across all tournaments, right?
Yes. The frustration is that rules that we have voted upon and agreed upon are now all of a sudden issues again. This rule wasn't created nor agreed upon with a bare majority or just entered by fiat. A lot of this was discussed in open forum and agreed upon by the vast majority of the people present. Well, maybe those people are not participating in the industry anymore, and now we've got a new generation. That's entirely possible. It's been a long time since this particular rule was discussed and agreed upon. And I see the logic in both sides. Yeah, I mean, let's face it, if it was anybody else's 10K, two 5K chips, almost any other seat at the table, it's merely a call. I get that, and that's the right call there. It's different because, once again, the player just didn't make their intentions clear. You said it simply. Speak up. It's allowed. It doesn't cost us anything. Let us know what you're doing. I'd prefer that we make sure the recommended procedure would be that lines are changed correctly prior to the action starting, which would render this particular rule null and void. It would not apply in any way because the change is correct.
Right.
You don't need to remove a chip to make a blind correct because the change is already out there. And if you remove, let's face it, if those chips are changed and if you're placing change in the pot, well, your intentions are absolutely clear.
Right.
So if you have, yeah, 5 1Ks and a 5K and you played all 10 in the pot, congratulations, we know what you're betting.
Right.
So yeah, a lot of this is cleared up by by spending some of the time we've saved. When we moved to Big Blind Annie, we saved a lot of time. We got a lot more hands out every round, and that's great. Every level's got more hands. It's better for us. It makes tournaments go faster, makes the game less tedious. Now we don't have to listen to the dealer's drone, Annie's please, every single hand. That's great.
Right.
Less noise pollution, more fun. I'm in favor of all of it. But now that we've gained all of this time, we can spend it judiciously and prudently. And changing the blinds, whether you're changing the big blind or the small blind, I mean, you should definitely be changing the big blind, because if they don't have enough small chips to poke both the big blind and the ante, that needs to be correct. The pot should be correct. The ante should be absolutely correct to the chip before you've gotten the action started, before you've dealt the card, preferably. That's absolutely preferable for a whole lot of reasons. The situation we've discussed is number one.
Right.
But number two, the rest of the table now is not confused. There's nothing to be confused about when the bets are correct. Now, that doesn't mean every single bet on the table needs to be changed. It doesn't. If somebody during a 1,500, 3,000 round throws out a 5K chip silently, we don't need to change that chip right now. Just leave it alone. But if it's in the blinds, why not change it? The action hasn't started yet. If things are clear, if the pot is right, it's great. And let's face it, if somebody wins the blinds in a walk, which is probably the most common outcome, now you don't have to worry about fumbling for change then. You've already done it. It was going to happen no matter what. You were going to make the change now or later. Rarely, except in the case where this guy obviously bet his chips and we don't know what was going on. That was the only case where he didn't need to make the change. And even then, making the change would have been better, not worse.
Right.
So, yeah. It's like, I keep drilling into my dealers, when the action is done and no limit, if there is no more betting to be accomplished and one or more players are all in, don't fix the side pots until the cards are run out. If the player with the most chips wins, you have saved trouble. You have prevented an error from occurring. But if you fix those pots before you get the cards out and the guy with the biggest stack wins, you have fixed pots for nothing. You have created side pots for no reason. And you've given yourself a chance to screw this up if it is that way. If the player that doesn't have the large stack wins the pot and you fix the side pots, they better have become correct. Because if they're not, now we got to untangle that. You didn't save any time. If the player with the smaller stack than the larger stack was going to win the pot or one or more of the pots in play, you were going to have to fix the side pots anyway. So you didn't save that time if that's the case. And
right.
If the guy with the biggest stack wins all the pots, you've wasted time. So there is no time to be gained ever, but there is time to lose. Well, the same thing applies here. That blind was going to have to be changed more often than not, almost all the time. So you might as well change it now. What time are you saving? The only time you're saving is when the guy who is in the blind with an oversized chip makes a bet other than the blind. And now you're giving him a chance to make his bets unclear, which just happened. So the one time you're saving time dealing and getting more hands out is the one time we're giving the most possible chance to a player to make an unclear bet.
Right.
Doesn't help.
I know that the job of the TDA really is to make a clear rule for situations that can come up.
Yes.
And so you have to think of all of the different possibilities. But the most simple solution, and like I said, we've come to it numerous times, is just say what it is you're doing. And as a player, that also saves time.
It's amazing.
So,
and you find it, funny as it sounds, more often in Omaha games, whether it's PLO or limit, you find that players are chatterboxes. They just can't shut up, except when it's their turn to bet or their turn to turn their cards over a showdown, and then you can't get a damn word out of them. It's starting to become the thing in tournaments too.
Yeah,
players will never be quiet. Until it's their turn to act, and then they're not saying a word. Oh, it might give something away. But you haven't shut up the whole time.
Right.
So, yeah, if you make your intentions clear, that obviously keeps us from having to apply the rule book. If you pay attention, it generally keeps us from having to apply a good chunk of the rule book. The third part, and that's the tougher one, because the level of dealer expertise and aptitude is sadly not rising in a lot of places, especially with the high demand for tournament dealers. The tournament event schedule is overloaded in this country and around the world. I mean, there's just many multi-day events going on in many different places all at the same time. There's only so many dealers who are actually qualified enough to actually deal this game well. Not everybody can just pick up a deck of cards and pitch them out, and now you got a dealer. That's not how it works.
Right.
So the other big factor in the creation and use of these rules is we're trying to overcome dealer inexperience. It's a necessity. We have to.
Right.
Not everybody who's holding an event is going to get a qualified dealer. It's just that simple. Simple math. There's just not enough people for the positions we are open.
Right.
So yeah, a lot of the rules are trying to overcome that too. So we as operators and tournament directors need to do at least a more credible job, if not an outstanding job, of getting across to our teams, dealers and floors alike, exactly what we expect and what we need to happen. And we can't just issue orders. We got to give them the why. And the why is very reasonable. If we handle things correctly, both at the dealer level and the floor level, then everything's going to go a lot smoother. Training the players too. I mean, I, for many years now, have always included paying attention, protecting your hand, and making your intentions clear as part of my opening announcements at tournaments. And that's pretty standard most places and should be. Anybody out there, please, please make those very simple requests part of your opening announcements at tournaments. When you're sitting your players down, you're getting them going, you're firing them up, you're about to get the cards in the air, and you're going through the few rules you generally want to emphasize. Protect your hand, pay attention, make your intentions clear. If you constantly communicate the big three, you will have many, many fewer, and I love combining those words because it's obviously a little bit oxymoronic, but correct English. You will have fewer decisions to make. That can only be good for all of us. It can only be good for every player. It can only be good for every dealer. It can only be good for every casino and card room. It can only be. When you're making fewer decisions because of fewer errors and fewer unclear situations, the game's more enjoyable. The game is more fun. It is more productive. There's no downside. But yeah, it comes down to players. Make your intentions clear. Dealers, please make change for the blinds. Just like we ask you to get cards mixed into the muck. If you're mucking the cards, make them disappear. We don't want them to be found if we can't help it. If we can't find the cards, we have no decision to make. There's no hand. You're out. Like here.
Right.
If you make change for the blinds and make sure that the blinds are posted correctly, we never have to make this decision, and therefore no player ever has to be unsatisfied.
And there you go. Yeah, Matt, if you're listening, it sounds like Elliot and you are on the same page.
I would say.
So I will be interested to see how this goes at the TDA Summit. Elliot, I appreciate your insight on it as well, and we'll talk next week.
Let's break it down with Hand of the Week.
We're back with another Hand of the Week with our resident novice, Patrick. How you doing, man?
I am wonderful, my friend. Yourself?
I'm doing well. I am doing well. For those who don't know, we've actually had a pretty good incline of listeners over the past couple of months, which is great news. But just so everybody has a refresher, what we do here, Patrick has a little less experience playing poker, and so we,
I feel like that's being generous, Joe. I'd say I have a lot less experience. I'm very much a with my buddies home games, and been, you know, invited to a handful of other, if you will, I don't know if the terminology is fine, but a stepped up home game of sorts, you know, with others. But I know my way around the table, and we are learning as we go. So
I'll put it this way. We would invite Patrick to have the money flowing How's that?
I have a standing seat at any one of y'all's games on a regular basis. And I proudly sat at that table and bought back in and finally used the excuse of having to go home to my family at some point the first time I came. No, that's this is great. So for anyone that's been joining, this is awesome. We welcome you, you know, novice, pro, whatever. We're here to go over the hands and hang out.
Right. The idea is that we get the perspective of somebody that's played a lot of hands and the perspective of someone that has not played as many hands together, so that when you're at the tables playing against somebody that with less experience, you know where they're kind of coming from too. But yep. I will say, over the past few months, you have grown into a much better poker player. So,
absolutely, that's good news. It's been good. And the one time that I've gotten together, you know, this kind of goes to show the novice of it, you know, with my buddies, and you know, we're all in the married and having babies time frame of our lives. So the home games are not on a regular basis, but hopefully we get back to that as we go. But, you know, the one time I did sit down with them, you know, here, you know, a couple months ago, it was, I felt very good about myself compared to what I used to. So I won't get into specifics. I know a couple of them do listen on a regular basis. So, you know, not to call anybody out, but it was a good day in the Patrick, you know, household. So anyway, but yeah. So for all the new listeners, welcome. We love having you here. So,
and then just one more shout out here. Jackpot Digital is our sponsor for Hand of the Week. Absolutely. And they just actually completed an install of three tables at Jackson Rancheria in Jackson, California. They installed these three tables. So if you're in that area, go check them out. Send us some pictures. Let us know what the tables are like there. They're continuing to install in these other areas that have orders for the tables too. So 2024 is off to a great start for them. So if you're in that big, I looked it up. Jackson, California has 5,101 as their population. So if you're in that booming town of Jackson, then let us know how these tables are.
Yeah, you know, if you're in the Sacramento, San Jose area, take a little drive out to the woods. So it looks gorgeous. Let us know. And yeah, if anywhere else around the country that they have them. So, or if you're going to be in a casino and you want to know, holler at us. We'll tell you. We know where they are.
Yeah, exactly. Now, hand of the week, sent in by Jeff Gibson.
All right.
He is playing 2-5.
Okay.
And the villain in this hand was at the table before he got there. And he says he was told when he sat down that he had been spewing money. So
maybe he was a novice just like me. Whatever, who knows?
And he says, since that time, we have been playing for about 2 hours and have personally witnessed him losing over $4,000.
Man, I have a lot to say on that, but wow is all I'm going to say right now at the moment. Goodness gracious. All right. I'm going to sit at that table.
Yeah, we have $1,800 in our stack.
Okay.
And the villain had just added to their stack and sit with an even $1,000. So, under the gun, limps for $5. Villain is in under the gun plus one, and he also limps, which is probably why he continues to spew money. We are in the seat next to the villain with the queen of clubs, queen of hearts.
Well, we're not going to limp with the queens in hand.
That is correct.
We are going to play. I'm probably going to bet 20.
Okay, that's not terrible. Mm-hmm. Here's the thing: it's isolation time, right?
Yep.
So we want to get everybody out of this pot and play heads up with this villain who's spewing money. So if we need to go a little bit higher than that to get the others out, then we should. But I think 20 to 25 is probably good.
Yep. You're sitting at the table. You know, Jeff said he's been sitting at the table now for a couple hours. He's got a read on the hands. You know, if it's a, you know, four times or five times or whatever, as far as, you know, that kind of goes, whatever's needed. But yes, you're absolutely right. I would love to. You know, I feel like I'm being set up now. I mean, we have, you know, obviously we talk about this every week. The hindsight's 20/20, so I'm being set up. But at the same point, no, I'm taking the villain down.
That's right. And Jeff wants to isolate too. He makes it $30.
Oh, Jeff, I like it.
So he knows what the right amount is, apparently. Or maybe he doesn't, because Under the Gun and the villain both call.
Interesting. All right.
I don't like both of them calling, but at least everybody else is out.
No, so that's what, 30, 60, 90, 92?
It'll be 97 with the blinds, right? Because...
You said the other one was Under the Gun. My apologies, yeah. 97.
97 in the pot. And the flop is the Jack of Clubs, 9 of Clubs, 5 of Diamonds. Under the Gun checks... And our villain leads out now for $30.
So a man's sitting there holding pocket fives thinking he's going to be, you know, playing. Is that what you're telling me? I think the villain needs to listen to Annie up. I don't know what to make of that bet, to be honest with you. I mean, obviously he's got something that he wants to play. Of what sorts, I don't know. I'd have to get back to you on that one. Holding queens, you know, unless someone's sitting there with jacks, nines, or fives. I mean, there's a flush draw out there. Okay, here's where it comes in. So my gut is telling me to come over the top with them, you know, probably something like 90.
I like the way you're thinking.
90 is probably what I'm thinking. I'm still feeling good enough about our hand. Let's put it that way.
You are thinking exactly what I was thinking. 90, 95. That's what I was thinking. I think it's interesting that he leads into us. That is definitely not normal.
My gut's making him on clubs is what my gut immediately said. When he bet that, I, you know, take into account him and what we know about him and the size of the bet for him, I guess. My gut's saying clubs.
Makes sense. Yeah. I think... It sounds like he likes to play big pots, right? Obviously, he's losing a lot of money here and there. So he likes to play big pots. So he probably was trying to build that pot up in case he hit something. So I'm the same.
Yeah.
And Jeff does raise. He goes a little higher, though. He raises to 110.
All right.
It's not bad. It might keep the villain from raising it up again, right?
Yeah.
You know, keep him from pumping more in there. So I like that bet, actually. Under the Gun folds and the villain calls.
That's a win-win. We got rid of the other player, you know.
So now we've got 317 in the pot. And the turn is the 10 of spades.
Okay. So now we got to open in a straight draw. Okay.
Yeah. Go ahead. Yep. The villain leads into us again, this time for 135.
Let me guess, 100? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with third pot. All right. Our guy has finally hit something or he's just, I don't know. Okay. So queens, we've got jack of clubs on the board, nine of clubs on the board, five of diamonds, 10 of spades. Open in a straight draw for us. Still got top pair, you know, pairing on the board. I'm still feeling good. 300.
All right. My attention starts to kind of draw toward some two pair options, maybe jack nine, jack 10.
Okay.
But we are open ended. So
we are. I think we're going to, you know, we'll always find out here at the end, or at least I hope we do. But I hope, I mean, I'm still going on the clubs. I think he's still fine on that. I mean, to him, he's obviously played a lot today. So it definitely still fits in my viewpoint, but I could see what you're saying. Yeah. Jack nine would, you know, fit.
Yeah. I like the raise though here, you know, in the 300 to 315, 320 range, somewhere in there. I do like that. then if we miss on the river, because we are open-ended, if we miss that on the river, then maybe we can see it cheaper.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm thinking too. Jeff just calls though. So with the call, there's 587 in the pot. And the river is the three of diamonds.
Helps nobody.
And again, our villain leads into us for 120.
What a weird, weird series of bets, dollar-wise. Yeah,
right?
I mean, just so interesting. You also got to take this into account, too. I was thinking this earlier. Tell me if I'm crazy or not. But he's already lost, what, $4,000, they said. And so maybe he's just, you know. I mean, that's got to change your betting a little bit. I mean, after a certain period of time. I mean, it shouldn't, but I'm sure it does. All right, so jack of clubs, nine of clubs, five of diamonds, ten of spades, three of diamonds. I still feel okay about this hand, but I do think I'm going to call him.
So
because let me tell you my mindset. You tell me if I'm crazy. I don't think anything over the top at this point. I mean, I think he's going to go all in. If we raise him, I think he's going to go all in, and I'd rather just not do that.
We played this hand exactly the same. There is,
look at this, months in.
I'm trying to think of another time that we have played a hand exactly the same, and I cannot think of one. So I definitely am just calling.
I don't
calling
think we ever have. Yeah. Okay.
that bet of 120 there means something. I just don't know what. Right? Is he downsizing to get a call? Or is he scared of the straight and then doesn't want to show weakness by checking?
Yeah.
So he decides, well, I'm going to put something in there, right? I'll say this. These are the spots that make these really good poker players money.
Yeah. And
make more money than the average poker player, right? They're able they're able to find these spots and go, okay, well, that means I need to make this move, and they make more money than I would or you would or whatever. So
yeah.
In this case, I'm just calling because I think he could be really just sucking us in. And if we, like you said, if we raise, then we're really going to have to put the whole stack in there. If we put the whole stack in, does he fold? Maybe. We might be able to get him to fold two pair there. Maybe. But it sounds it sounds like he likes to play big pots. So I don't know that we can get somebody like that. I don't know that we can get him to fold.
I agree. I'm going on record too. We have not seen the ending of this, but it is going to either be clubs and he's missed, or he's got jacks.
Pocket jacks?
Yep.
Okay.
Just changed my gut feeling.
All right. Jeff calls.
Okay, good. In line with us.
The villain turns over the king of spades, jack of spades.
So he's got jacks.
He's just a pair of jacks. That's it. We take it down.
No, there's nothing wrong with your podcast. There's no dead air. We're just kind of dumbfounded. Right. I will say, going back to like when I first started with doing this and like, you know, hey, like working this and you know, trying to get better, those series of bets from him is not far-fetched from what I might have done. and not necessarily the dollar amounts or anything, but the no rhyme or reason. Like, there is nothing that you could do. That's very interesting.
So Jeff asks the question, and he says the reason that he's sending this in, he's asking, should we have raised for thin value on the river or just called? And I really think just calling is – I think you did the right thing, Jeff. I think you just call there.
I agree. I mean, from my point of view, too. I mean, I think you're asking for – I mean, obviously, you know, he's got hindsight now, which we talk about every week. But, like, you're not gaining a whole lot there of, you know, yes, you probably could have gotten a little bit more out of him, but at the same point, maybe not. You know, he's got top pair on the board with a good kicker. So, you know, throughout, he's probably hoping to pair up that king and feel great about it or another jack. And now that he doesn't have it, he may fold it anyways, and you're still just taking down what he's got in. I don't think you raise there.
I think that the risk versus reward there is not worth it. Yep. Would they have called? Maybe. They might have called, but they also might have had Jack 9 and you lose more. So, or pocket fives, like you said, you know, although if they had pocket fives, I feel like more than 120 was going to be the bet on the river there.
You would hope so.
I think the only place that if you wanted to get more money in there, raising on the turn would have been the place to do it, not on the river.
Yeah.
That's the only thing I would say. Other than that, I think just calling the river is fine.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it was played great. And I don't think there's anything wrong with his call on the turn. You know, I don't think there's anything wrong with that whatsoever. So, yeah. Well done, Jeff. That's a good hand.
Yeah. Yeah. I love hands like that where you know, we still won. It's still a win. You still won, Jeff. But you're still thinking about it. You know, you're still trying to get better and thinking about situations like this where could I have gotten – did I miss an opportunity maybe or, you know, something like that. So that's why we do this to get better, not to just say, oh, look at this terrible hand that I lost on or whatever. Yeah. So congratulations, Jeff. Good job. And kudos to you, Patrick. I think you played that very well. So
we're getting there. I like this.
Well, let's try another one next week. What do you say?
That sounds good. I'm here for it.
All right. Talk to you later.
See you, bud.
It's time for Joe's
One-outer. Being back home this week has me thinking about the environment that we play poker in. It can really have an impact on the outcome of the game. I think one of the most significant advantages is that, of course, comfort breeds confidence, right? When you're in an environment where you feel relaxed, you're more likely to have confidence in your decisions. You can make those bold moves, stay focused, and maintain your composure during your downswings. Familiar surroundings basically allow you to play your A game without the distractions that come with the unfamiliar environments. Because let's face it, casinos and poker rooms are a hub of activity, right? Flashing lights, ringing slot machines, of course, the chatter from the other players. It can all be great at times, but it can also be distracting. And if you're in familiar surroundings, that'll minimize those distractions, allowing you to concentrate completely on the game at hand. When you feel comfortable, you're able to focus on things like analyzing your opponents, calculating odds, and making more strategic decisions. So while the allure of traveling to that glamorous casino or prestigious poker room, it may be tempting, there's still that undeniable value in playing poker in familiar surroundings. Whether it's the comfort of your own home or your favorite local card room, the comfort, reduced distractions, and thus enhanced focus will significantly improve your game. Now, I'm not saying to never venture out. Just make sure you're prepared for the distractions that are surely going to be awaiting you. And remember, when you're playing in a new place, if you can't spot the fish in the first 30 minutes, well, you know how that goes. That's today's one-outer, and that's today's show. I'll see you next week, A-Team. And until then, I'll see you at the tables.
The Ante Up Podcast is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com. Contact the show at podcasts@AnteUpMagazine.com or call the show at 540-339-7741. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to editor@anteupmagazine.com.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.